All right, we are holding by the second Mishnah on Chofetz Chaim. Mishnah says, "Kol davar sha'osev oichel, any kind of thing that you find, any kind of animal that you can that can do work and there and eat based on the fee for its work. For example, let's say an ox, you could rent it out, and therefore the money is available to feed it with. Yasev oichel, then that's what you should do. You should rent it out." Don't sell it. You could now, conceivably, you could sell it, as we're going to talk about in the Gemara, and then just set aside the money, and when the guy comes and gives a simon, you'll give him the money, and then he'll go and use it to buy a new animal. Better don't do that, because a person likes the animal that he's already accustomed to, that he's already trained, etc. Therefore, better you should try to keep the animal. On the other hand, you're going to have to feed it. Feeding it costs money. So if it's something where you can rent it out to others, some of folks should say to yourself as well, then that's what you should do. Then that way, cover that expenses that way, exactly. Something that does not do work, but yet it has to eat, should be sold. The pasuk says, the pasuk says you should return it to him, which implies, you should see how to go about returning it to him in an effective way. Meaning, Rashi says, for example, if it ends up at the cost of feeding the animal over the time that you've been keeping it equals half or more of the value of the animal, then you can't say you've effectively returned the animal. Which, by the way, the portion points out, Marshall and others point out, if it's less, the implication is if it's less than half, that's not a big deal. More than half, then already you have a problem, and that is why at that point, if it's reaching that point, then already you should sell it.
Just an animal or everything else?
Well, we're talking about an animal because it has to be fed. I mean, anything else, we're going to learn in the next Mishnah, we're going to learn on Chofetz in the day, we're going to start talking about different things that you find that have to be used once in a while or else they'll shaken out or whatever, or else they'll get moldy or rust or whatever. Here we're talking about animals.
You have building that costs more than it brings. You also have
this is an aveda. You don't find the lost building. This is we're talking about lost object.
An aveda.
Yeah, mm-hmm. On a lost object. Yeah. It doesn't mean, by the way, you have to. If you want to, you're certainly allowed to keep the animals and give out the expenses on your own. The story in Tainis about Rochanan Mendoza that he found some chickens on his doorstep and held on to them for a while, much longer than the time the Gemara can tell us yet to hold on to them. But then they were causing trouble, they were getting into things or whatever, so he sold them not in order to set aside the money, but to buy goats. And then he kept the goats for a while until finally, eventually, a long time later, the guy came back and got it and gave some money on chickens and got the goats instead.
Mm.
But we're talking about the basic dinner, you know, we're not talking about the temperature of the dinner. Okay, next question is, so if you're selling these animals eventually, there's money involved. What happens, what's the din as far as the money? Reb Tarfon only yishtamash b'hem. Reb Tarfon says that you can use that money. L'fichach, therefore, because you're able to use it, makes you a shomer safek. Im avu chayev v'charusan, therefore, if that money gets lost, you're going to be chayev. But what happens there, like a shomer safek, or even we'll talk about in the Gemara, maybe even conceivably like a shoyel, which is an even higher standard. Rabbi Akiva and the lawyer Shtamash Behen. Rabbi Akiva says you're not allowed to use them.
To use
the money. You just have to set it aside in safekeeping until the guy comes back and gives the same. And therefore, if the money gets lost or damaged or whatever, then you're not higher for it any more than a basic shomer. Again, as we'll talk about in the morning.
Rabbi Tarfon says you can lend that money.
Not lend. You yourself can use it. You can, for example, you know, you have $100 sitting over there. You can dip into it, for example, you know, you need to go shopping or whatever. And then you make a note, you know, you put yourself an IOU that, you know, you have to. Yeah. So therefore, the point is that the Gemara is going to mention a distinction whether you use them or not. Most Mephoshim say that actually, or pretty much all of them actually say, it doesn't literally mean if you use them. A point of attack because you're able to use them, that already makes you a shomer safek or even a shoyel, even if you never ended up actually using the money, according to him, you would nevertheless be chayav b'achuzah. And according to Rav Akiva, no. Okay, so the Gemara still says, the first part of the mission that said anything that can work for its upkeep, you have to make it work and use that money to feed it. Does that mean you keep the animal forever? That you're gonna have to be a shomer on this animal forever? But, no, it only means up until 12 months. At that point already, you
know, somewhere else, really, I mean, can mean 12 months.
Generally, no. I mean, by inevitably, until I lower them, usually still go. But there is a concept, Tosis points out later on, that usually you can expect that after a year, a person has forgotten about his Aveda and then been Yahish on it. So therefore, at that point, the Chacham Ram can be Matriyahu to take care of the animal anymore. At that point, you can sell it and set the money aside. Tanya Namihachi, indeed, we learn like that in a place. It's called Dabasha Osamoichal.
And it belongs to you?
No, again, the money is in trust if the guy ever comes back. If in the end we see the guy wasn't Miyash, we can assume after 12 months it's likely that he was Miyash. We had the story the other day about a Gorda Shmuel found donkeys after 12 months and still returned them. It's not fully yours after 12 months. After 12 months, the likelihood is that it was Yush. But, you know, again, Yush Shalemi Das. You would have to have some way of knowing that you would have to have some way of knowing. No, it means that all it means is at that point you can sell the animal and set the money aside. We're not going to be Matriyahu, you're going to be a shomer on this animal forever. However, you're still going to be a shomer on the money. If the guy ever does show up, you're going to have to return him the money. Any kind of animal that works and you can feed it out of that, then part of a chamor, for example, a cow or a donkey, you have to take care of them in 12 months. After that point, shum demayim literally means you evaluate how much they're worth. So Rashi says that means that you sell them and you set aside and then you set aside the money. There's different other shum, you evaluate them. So Rashi learns you sell them, which leads some of the to discuss, does it mean you can sell them unilaterally? Does it even mean, for example, you can sell them to yourself? Let's say I'll buy this animal and set the money aside and use it for my own purposes. Or does it mean it has to be sold in the presence of Beis Din to make sure that you value it fairly, to make sure you don't undervalue it? The Rambam gives another twist on it, which is the Rambam learns that shum d'mehen basically means you treat this animal like it was a case that we're going to learn later on, the fifth parak, a shum part of a chaver, where two people make a business deal that I have a baby animal, I'm going to give it to you to raise, and then eventually we'll split profit. There's a known kind of bit we'll learn later on in the fifth paragraph about the relevance of this, because we're going to have to talk about it, how to avoid issues of ribbit when you're doing that, because you don't want to have the guy basically taking care of the animal for sort of for free, and essentially you lent him the animal and then he's going to be getting half the value of it. That would be a problem with ribbit. So we're going to learn later on in the Samach, so we're going to learn about how you structure that to avoid the problem with ribbit. But anyway, that I'm going to learn, you do similarly over here, you treat it as though it was an animal given to you to raise, and then you go accordingly. You figure out the amount that accordingly. Agolim Osiachim, continue the bright. So what about calves or baby horses, ponies, or baby donkeys, actually, which don't work for a living. The top of band, Shlosha Chodashim, those you have to take care of for 3 months. So that you don't have to do 12 months. Like with adult animals, only 3 months.
And then the Kambay,
again, at that point, you can evaluate them and sell them. Again, sell them to others, sell them to yourself, do a shuma, whatever it is. Same kind of thing. Avodim v'tanagolim, geese and chickens, which are even more of a hassle to take care of. Actually, tanagolim specifically doesn't mean chickens in general. It actually points out we're talking about roosters. The Gemara's going to talk about in a minute about hens. Hens lay eggs. Roosters don't. So avodim is geese. I guess the bashus male geese. The tanagolim and roosters. The top of them shloshim yeh, then you only have to take care of for 30 days. The kind of elach shom gemein amanichin, and at that point again you can sell that and set money aside. So you see that even with all kinds of animals, there is a limit how long you have to hold on to them for. Okay, Amar Rav Nachman, so kind of gulus kibehem agasa. For that purpose, a hen is considered like a large animal, For purposes of Aveda, it's like a large animal, like a cow or like a donkey, in that you can get eggs out of it. It lays eggs, you're able to sell the eggs and use that money to feed the hen. Therefore, 12 months. Indeed, Tanya Namihachi, the room like that, another Braisa, Tanagolos of the Hemagasa, a hen or a large animal, such as a cow or a donkey, Metapaban Shnemas Hodesh, you have to take care of them for 12 months. After that, you can sell them and set aside the money. A golem with siachim, calves and baby cows and baby horses or donkeys. The top of an lamadion, you take care of them for 30 days. Now, previous price said 3 months. We're going to ask in a second, what is it? 3 months, 30 days. And we convey lachshon the man manichin, and after that you can sell them and set the money aside. Avodim the town of Berlin, geese or roosters, the chaldav should be pulled in the rubber mischare. Anything else where the cost of taking care of it is greater than the cost of than what you could earn out of it. The top of that shloshi yom, you have to take care of them for only 3 days. The kind of elach shams meinam anicha. Okay, so now we have two brises. Kasha agolim asiachin a agolim asiachin. We have a contradiction. The one for the first brise said that calves and ponies you have to take care of for 3 months. The other one said 30 days. Avos in the town of Berlin, avos in the town of Berlin. You also have a spira between the two things about geese and roosters. One said 30 days. The other one said 3 days. So what is it? The answer is agolim asiachin a golem asiachin like kasha. It's not a contradiction about the two brises, what they talk about calves and ponies, because hod raya v'hod ketuma. The one brisa, the first brisa, is talking about where they graze. So raya, where they graze out in the fields. The ketuma is where you have to feed it. So Rashi describes the 3 months is when you're in an area where there is pasture, there's grass for them to pasture on, it's time when grass is growing. It's not such a hassle, fine, you have to take care of the animal every day, you have to send it out to graze and they'll come home in the evening, but it's not as much of a hassle as if it's the time of year, for example, or a place where there's not very much grass and therefore you have to feed it by hand, then only 30 days. So then you only have to keep it for 30 days. Similarly, there's also no contradiction between the two cases of geese and roosters because the one brisa is talking about large ones, the other one is talking about small ones. What does that mean? Rashi says large ones eat more. Therefore, the second brisa is referring to large ones. You only have to hold on to them for 3 days. And after that, already the cost of feeding them for 3 days is going to be greater than the value or half the value of the animal or the bird. Therefore, sell it and then set aside the money so the guy doesn't end up losing the whole value.
Okay, force feed them to produce liver.
The geese, that's, I don't know.
Is that allergic?
It might be tzabal. It might well be tzabal. I don't know. But you do find in places in Gemara that talks about force feeding animals and chains at the Shabbos, for example. So maybe, I don't know. It could be one of those things. If there is a valid purpose for it, then you're allowed to. I don't know. Anyway, so Rashi learns then the large ones you only have to keep for 3 days. Small ones, since they don't eat as much, you have to keep them for a month. The Rambam and Rabbeinu Hanano learn the other way around. Large ones get into things more; they're more of a hassle to take care of. Small ones basically stay in one place. Therefore, large ones with only 3 days would be the second price. Small ones would be the first. The Rambam and Rabbeinu Hanano explain it that way. The opposite of Rashi. By the way, I mean, we talked about the other day, for example, that the Rishonim said the thing that if you find a cow, for example, you're obligated to clip its tail at the regular time that you're supposed to. So that serves as the basis. Some of the Rishonim say that serves as the basis for what we're saying over here. This concept that you are obligated to take basic care of the animal, to feed it for X number of days before you go and sell it, is based on that concept. If we looked over there, the Torah mentioned shur to teach us that you have to clip its tail. By the same analogy, you have to do other things that are normal to take care of found animals. Other than them say it's more that you become a shomer, as in fact next tomorrow we're going to talk about what kind of, we learned about a camel, so what kind of shomer are you on an Aveda? So a shomer has a certain responsibility about taking care of the animal.
How often do you have to clip the tail?
However often it has to be done, whatever. Okay. The Mishnah said anything that doesn't work for a living you sell, according to the schedule that we mentioned in the two prices. Turn up on it, because the Pasuk says Hashem voice to the Pasuk says you should return it to him, implies see how you should go about to return it to him in an effective way. Because ultimately, whatever you spent on it, you're going to be entitled to reimbursement from him. You don't want that the reimbursement is going to be too much compared to the value of the animal. So it shouldn't be, for example, that you found, let's say, three calves, and you're going to take the value of one of them and have to use that for feed for the other two. So eventually, when the guy comes, he's not going to be able to get, he's only going to have two, because the third one, he's only going to have two-thirds of what he lost, basically, yeah. Or to feed the value of one pony to the other ponies. Absalom has it, the value of one rooster to the other beast. The town knows the town knows that we're one rooster to the other rooster.
You sell them, or
you sell them while it, before the expense of feeding them and taking care of them has reached that point. So that's a half, actually. That's why Rashi said in the Mishnah, that once it reaches chatzi dama, half the value, that's the point already. The chachamim, the numbers that are in these brises that the chacham gave us are based on an evaluation, and in general, that's how long it'll take to reach half the value of it.
But here's the thing, you have no egel agolim. So
that's a loyach for egel agolim. In other words, if it was, for example, that you found 10 calves and you had to sell one of them in order to have enough money to feed the other nine, that's not so bad. That's not so bad. Go ahead and do that. But the point is,
one out of two, or one out of three.
In other words, you're feeding one to the other two. So the guy's only going to end up with two out of the three.
Is it a third or is it a fifth?
No. So you're right. Sorry. No. It's 50% of any of the value of any of the individual animals. That's what it is. Yeah. So he said, "Ma yehi b'damim? What's going to be with the money?" Rav Tarfon ami yishtamish chula. That Rav Tarfon had said that you're allowed to use them, etc. So the Gemara says, "Ad kan leitzvigi." Now, what do we see? We see that they're only arguing as far as this chiyuv of what chiyuv he has as far as the money. Elef kinishtamish behen, only because he has the ability to use them. Now, again, kinishtamish behen on the surface of it could mean when he actually uses them. However, pretty much all the Rishonim explain that that's not what the Gemara means. It means the fact that he's able to use them. The fact that he's able to use them, even if he never actually uses them, according to the Tarfon, it makes him a shemesah. But the implication seems to be that if you didn't have permission, the money. In other words, Rav Tarfon is saying once you sold the animal, you're allowed to use the money. Therefore, if it gets bought to Chayav Bachurim, and Rav Akiva says no. So the implication is all Rav Tarfon is saying because you're allowed to use them, that is why you're Chayav Bachurim. But Avaloy Nishtamish Behen. But the implication is that if you weren't allowed to use them, im avdu potter, then you would be potter if they got lost. The problem with that is, lema to have a tear of the Rav Yosef. In that case, should we say that our Mishnah is a contradiction to Rav Yosef? The Itmar, because we had a discussion, we learned it in Bava Kamma, Shomer Aveda, when a person is watching over an Aveda, Rabba Amar Kashema Chinam, Rav Yosef Amar Kashema Sacha, Amar Kashema Sacha. Rabba says, even if we're not talking about something that he has the ability to use,
right?
Rabba says he only has the liability of a Shema Chinam. He has the liability of a Shema, fine. But he has the minimum possible liability, which therefore is a Shema Chinam. The only thing he's responsible for is to be careless.
Right.
And Rav Yosef says he's like a Shema Sacha. Why is he like a Shema Sacha? We learned two reasons in Bava Kamma why. One is because he gains what we call privileges of Yosef over there, the concept that while a person is occupied with one mitzvah, he's potter from another one. Therefore, if a poor person were to come to his door asking for tzedakah, he would be potter from giving him because he's involved with taking care of the Saveda. Now, Tosfos explains, Rabba would agree with that basic concept, sure. But Rabba would say, how likely is it we're not talking in general as long as the Aveda is in your house. You can't be called an Oisik the Mitzvah just because the Aveda is in your house. You can only be called an Oisik the Mitzvah while you're actually doing something with it, feeding it, watering it, whatever it is exactly, and bringing it home to begin with. Then you could say you're potter. Rabba takes the view, Tosfos says, how likely is it? What's the likelihood that Gavka at the moment you're taking care of this lost object, a poor person is going to come to your door and therefore you're going to be potter? It's not very likely. Therefore, Rama says, never mind, whereas Rabbi Yosef says, the fact is, there is that chance. And therefore,
you're going to give him from these money.
No, you wouldn't. Okay, you're potter for giving that poor person tzedakah because right now you're involved in another mitzvah.
Shmira. Exactly.
So therefore, Rabbi Yosef says, on that ground, you are gaining something. You have a potential gain from taking care of the Saveda, a potential gain that you're potter at the moment from tzedakah. Therefore, you become a Shana Sacha. That was one reason. Then the Gemara gave another reason over there because the Torah imposed on you the chiyuv to guard it, which there's a number of different explanations that for the Pharisees say what that means exactly. It can mean therefore you have this high mitzvah. It can mean whatever. Rabba might say, fine, the Torah imposed it on you. But the Gemara said over there, Rabba will say, fine, the Torah imposed it on you. It didn't impose on you any more than a Shem Achinam's obligation. You're not going to go so far as to say that you're going to be a Shem Asachar because the Eved Shem imposed on you to watch this more stuff. Okay. Now, the bottom line is, what is our Mishnah telling us? That according to Reb Tyson and Reb Akiva are arguing, this money that you got from selling the animal, what are you allowed to do with it? According to Reb Tyson, you're allowed to use it. Therefore, you are showing a suffer, which seems to imply that if Reb Tyson were to hold like Reb Akiva that you couldn't use it, then both of them would be saying you're not high. Like a shomer sacher. According to Reb Yosef, just the fact that you're a shomer on an aveda makes you a shomer sacher.
And
you have a chlayus. So what's the point then? What's
the
point?
You can be a shomer sacher.
No, that's the thing. Reb Tyson is saying you're a shomer sacher because you're allowed to use this money. In other words, let's say, for example, forget about animals. Let's say, for example, the actual animal itself. According to, you have an animal, you have a cloak, whatever we're going to learn in the next Mishnah. You're not allowed to use these things for yourself. We're only talking about the possibility, maybe when you have the money set aside after you took care of the animal, maybe you're allowed to use it according to the Tyson. But if you have a case where you're not allowed to use it, the pashtus or Tyson would say, like the Rakira, that you're not chayav back to use it. According to the Yosef, you're chayav back to use it regardless. You're shayav sacha regardless, even if you're not allowed to use it. Because of Prutta or Yosef or whatever. So how does Rabbi Yosef understand our Mishnah? If the Mishnah was talking about that the money got stolen by a ganav or lost, then that's not what the Mishnah is talking about. Even Rabbi Akiva would agree that you're chayav on the basis of what I'm saying. The very fact that you're a shomer and an aveda makes you a shomer sacher. The machlokas, rather, in our Mishnah is not about the name of aveda, which is what a shomer sacher is chayav on. A shomer sacher both of them are chayav on. They're arguing, are you upgraded further to a shoyel because of the ability to use this money? To a borrower, where a borrower has a very high level, has the highest level of responsibility. He's responsible for everything, basically. He's responsible for your finance, as we'll learn later on as we go through the Masechta. So it's like this. Reb Tyson saw a shoyel laid up on him, leashed to Moshe B'Gavai. Reb Tyson figures the Chachamim gave you permission to use this money. The Havale shoyel alayim. Therefore, you become a shoyel on this money. And a shoyel is high for everything. Actually, Tosis points out, in a certain sense, you could say he's not a shoyel. In a certain sense, you could say he's a loiver. He's a borrower. A borrower is also responsible for everything.
Sure, he's a borrower.
Well, it's a slight, in Hebrew, there's two different words for that. In Hebrew, a shoyel implies that you have to return the actual object itself.
Right.
A loiver is you're just returning the equivalent monetary value. Yeah. Tosafot says it's true. The Gemara could have just as well said that he's a loiver. The fact of the matter is, if you're spending the money, you're obviously not obligated to return the actual money. The reason why the Gemara is using the word shoyel is because we're talking about oinsin, and oinsin is a well-known thing by shoyel. It's true, technically a loiver is higher than an oinus as well. A loiver has to repay the loan no matter what. But you usually don't talk about this. It's not a common thing in the literature, in Gemara, in the literature, to talk about oinsin relative to a loiver. It's usually talked about relative to a shoyel. Therefore, we're using the word shoyel.
Shoyel means an object.
Where you actually expect it to return the actual object. Okay. So he's upgraded from a shoyel sacher to a shoyel. Rav Akiva says, "Well, why shoyel the later bottom dish to mushin gavaya?" Whereas Rav Akiva holds the Chacham did not give you permission to use that money. So, why do I have a shoyel? Well, I see you're not a shoyel. You're back down to a shoyel sacher, like as Rav Yosef said. But not to say that we're discussing whether he's a shomer sacher or not, because both of them would agree. Reb Yosef says that he's a shomer sacher regardless.
So the machlokes is between a shoyel and
is between a shoyel and a shomer sacher, not as we started by assuming between a shomer sacher and a shomer chino, which was how Rava would understand the Mishnah. Yeah. By the way, Tosfos, this long Tosfos over here, discusses, among other things, the question: who in the end is the halacha like? Is the halacha like Rava or is the halacha like Reb Yosef? Tosfos argues on various grounds that the halacha may actually be like Rabba, that normally you'd only be a shomer chino. Mainly on the basis, Tosfos says, it's Gemara later on, we're going to have in the next parish, that bears on this, there's machlokas between Rav Nachman and Rav Huna over there about the responsibility of a person who's given money that's not in a bundle, whether he's allowed to use it or not, but the machloikis over there, what is he chayav oinsin or not? So Tosfos relates that to our machloikis over here. Since the halacha over there is like Reb Nachman, that he's potter from oinsin, therefore the halacha must also be like Rav over here, that he's shemachinim. Most other Rishonim say that no. Most other Rishonim say there's a difference between the two cases. For one thing, over there we're talking about the kodon, where the guy gave you it willingly, here we're talking about an Aveda where you came to you unwillingly. There's a number of reasons that I show you. And therefore the halacha can well be like a Nachman over there, the Apostle Moses, and still the halacha could be like a Joseph over here that you're chayim in the name of Aveda, that you're chayim of Hashem Asafa. Yeah. But there is also, I mean, Ephraim actually gives an argument that it's not necessarily a contradiction anyway. Over here, what we're saying is that according to the Parson, well, besides that also, there's consideration that over here we're saying, what you're saying the basic thing according to Rabbi Yosef is you're a shayim asar, because you're allowed to use the money you upgraded to a shayim. Over there, we're talking about as a maftir, usually the guy has maftir money by you, your basic thing is as a shayim asar, for the covenant, and then maybe you get upgraded to a shayim asar. So you're getting upgraded one each time. So you start out the Shema Safa, you get upgraded to Shaila. You start there, the Shema Chinam, you get upgraded to Shema Safa. So no contradiction, and therefore no reason to say, like Tosfos is saying, that the two of them are interdependent.
It depends where you start.
It depends where you start, basically, according to your Venerable Finance. Okay. Fine. Then come on out. Ihochi. So if you're going to say that that's the meaning of the Mishnah, that both Reb Tarfon and Reb Akiva are saying basically you're a Shema Safa. Reb Tarfon is arguing that because you're allowed to use the money, therefore you're a Shema. Then why do we need the statement that Rabbi Akiva is saying? Rabbi Akiva is saying you're not allowed to use it, therefore you're not chayav achru yosef. Meaning, if you're going to say, like the way Rabbi would understand the Gemara, the Mishnah, that the argument between Rabbi Tarfon and Rabbi Akiva is on the question of gnei b'av eda, hayim v'katani Rabbi Akiva and loyim shtamash b'hem, and now we understand. Rabbi Akiva says you're not allowed to use it at all. And therefore, if it gets lost, you're not chayav achrus. Because the Mishnah needs to tell us that to forestall Rabbi Yosef's understanding, because otherwise you might have thought that Rabbi Akiva agrees that he's a Shema Safa, as Rabbi Yosef indeed says. And therefore, they should be chayav gnei b'av eda, kamash malon lefichach. And therefore, Rabbi Akiva has to tell us that no, because you're not allowed to use them, l'ficha, therefore, not only, never mind, you're not a shoyl, you're not even a shem asar, not as Rabbi Yosef says. Because no, we don't hold the privilege of Rabbi Yosef. So if you learn the Mishnah that way, then we understand why Rabbi Akiva has to say his l'ficha. Ella, but no, hashti da'amit lo yishtamash ba'ed, but if you're saying that, and that's the point. The Mishnah is saying, now that you're saying it, can't use them, Shema Sacha Lehabi, so he's not in fact a Shema Sacha, unlike Rabbi Yosef, V'loi Mechayiv Gnei V'Aveda, and therefore he's not Chayiv Gnei V'Aveda. So the L'Fichach makes sense. Rabbi Akiva would be saying, I don't agree that a Shema of an Aveda in general is a Shema Sacha. You, Rabbi Tarfon, are arguing you're allowed to use this money, and therefore that should make him a Shema Sacha. I'm arguing, on a regular basis, he wouldn't be a Shema Sacha, because on a regular basis, like Rabbi says, he'd be a Shema Chinam. You're arguing that he can use the money that makes him a Shema Safa. I'm arguing he can't use the money. L'ficha. Therefore, there is no reason to make him a Shema Safa. Not because of the basic thing of Prusa. According to Rabbah's understanding. According to Rabbah's understanding of the Mishnah. It would work out very well what Rabbi Akiva is saying to the Tashman. He is saying, we both agree that basically a Shema Aveda is a Shema Chinam. I mean, he should be high to the Aveda. You're arguing in this case he's allowed to use the money, therefore that upgrades into a Shema Safa. I am saying that, no, he can't use the money. Therefore, there's no reason to say that you upgraded to a Shema Safa. He's still back down to a Shema Chinam. So then the Mishnah flows very well. But if you're going to say that both Rav Tarfon and Rav Akiva agree that he is Chayiv and Gnei V'Av Eda, whether he can use the money or not, because of Rav Yosef's reason, because of Purpose of Rav Yosef, and the only machlokes is about whether he's chayev and onus as a shoyl, my lafichach de Rabbi Akiva. Then why is Rabbi Akiva? What's Rabbi Akiva's lafichach? Hachim v'ayla the Mishnah. The Mishnah should have just said like this. Rabbi Akiva and the lawyer Shachash Ben. Rabbi Akiva just said you can't use them. But I'm not Yadayah just giving the lawyer Shachash Ben my shoyl, I'll be being a chayev after this. And automatically we know if he can't use it, then it means he's not a shoyl, because that's the definition of a shoyl is you borrow something. And therefore he's not chayav achrus. So you have to ask, l'fichach to Rabbi Akiva lovely. So why is Rabbi Akiva saying his l'fichach? And according to Rabbi Yosef, it doesn't seem to flow. The answer is mishum l'fichach to Rabbi Tarfon. Yes, the only reason, according to Rabbi Yosef, that Rabbi Akiva is saying his l'fichach is just for parallelism with Rabbi Tarfon. Rabbi Tarfon had to say l'fichach, as we're going to say in a second. He had to say that because you're allowed to use the mafichach, you're chayav after the son. Rabbi Akiva, therefore, when he says this thing, he also says mafichach, even though technically he didn't need to. Mm-hmm. Because the point of Yosef is a Shemesh Sarah. Because there often is in the Mishnah, there's often parallelism. And remember, the Mishnah was by heart originally. So, you know, when normally, you know.
It's more confusing.
No, but it's not, once you understand that it's not. Rabbi Akiva doesn't have to say Lefichach. He doesn't have to give his reason.
Right.
But it's because in your classroom, you said Lefichach. So, therefore, you know, when you're learning the Mishnah by heart, you're going to expect there's going to be a Lefichach in Rabbi Akiva as well. Yeah. Okay. Fine. So, you have to ask the Lefichach did a tie from Bali. Fine. You have to ask according to. Well, now you have to ask. According to Rav Yosef, why indeed does Rav Tarfon have to give his reason? According to Rav Yosef, again, neither one should have to give their reason. Once Rav Tarfon says Yishtamash Ben, automatically we should understand that means he's a shoyl. Once Rav Akiva says Lo Yishtamash Ben, automatically you should understand he's not a shoyl. And according to Rav Yosef, he's a shoyl suffer. On the face of it, neither one has to. So according to Rabba, you can understand, again, Rav Tarfon has to say his lefichach to tell you only because he's allowed to use the money does he become a shemesh sofer, but not because of proof of the Rav Yosef. But according to Rav Yosef, he's a shemesh sofer already. Tosfos says the Gemara is not really asking those questions so much because obviously, fine, according to Rav Yosef, the fact is there's still a certain chiddush in Rav Tarfon's case, the fact that he's a shemesh. So we're not really asking the question like Rav Yosef, how are you going to understand the Mishnah? It's more like the Gemara is giving us like a rhetorical question. And the answer is even the shorter lay abanon lishtamushigabayu, since the Rabbanon gave you permission to use this money, command the ishtamish begabayu, therefore even if you didn't actually use it, it's as if you used it. Therefore you're chayabach yosef. So that is your talisman's lufika. Therefore, because the Chacham gave you permission to use this money, automatically, as soon as this money comes into your possession, you are a shoyl on it, regardless whether you ever actually use it or not. Lepicha. Therefore, you're chayavach yourself. And then again, Rav Tarfon wasn't really necessary, and we only have a favorable parallelism.
And Rav Tarfon was not really necessary because...
No, Rav Tarfon is necessary, because without Rav Tarfon's lepicha, you would think it means if you end up using it, sure, you're a shoyl. You wouldn't realize that without using it, just the fact that it's in your possession already makes you a shoyl. That's what Joyce was saying. The Gemara is not really asking it as an actual question, but more as a rhetorical question to fully explain what Rav Tarfon is saying. Okay. The question is now, okay, now on all of this, so what are we saying? According to Rav Yosef, it comes out that according to Rav Tarfon, you're not only chayav on Aved, on Gnei of Aved, you're chayav even in Oinsin. And again, according to the Akiva, you're puzzled on it. The problem with that is the Shem Safar is hiding in the name of Aveda. So according to the Yosef's understanding of the Mishnah, what's Ovdu? The Ovdu could find it. The Mishnah says Ovdu, which implies within Aveda. It was lost. A Shem Safar is high on lost. If according to the Yosef, both Rav Tarfon and Rav Akiva agree that you're a Shem Safar, even if you can't use the money. So Ovdu would be chayim. What does Tarfon say? Therefore, Ovdu chayim back to your side.
Ovdu meaning what?
Ovdu meaning they were lost. Not lost as in you misplaced them, but lost it. Lost as, for example, let's say, you know, they disappeared, you know. So
Ivdu, no?
Ovdu means they were lost. No, Ivdu would mean they were destroyed. Ovdu means they were lost, for example. Let's say, for example, we're going to learn a little later, and we're going to learn in the next paragraph that money you're supposed to hide and you're supposed to bury in the ground. So let's say, for example, you know, you bury it in the ground, but you find, let's say, this place is not safe, you have to transport it someplace else or whatever, and then on the way, you are holding it carefully, as we'll learn later on, etc., and it got lost on the way, let's say, whatever. Yeah. And whatever. The point is, a shemesh sofer is chayav for aveda. So what's the Mishnah using the word ovdu?
Doesn't need to if it's a shemesh sofer.
If it's a shemesh sofer, you're chayav on ovdu either way. According to your tarfon, there's no reason to say, therefore, if you're chayav on aveda regardless. And what your rakhid is saying, if you're ovdu in chayav on aveda, and according to him, you are chayav on aveda. The answer is, we can understand the word ovdu in our Mishnah the way Rabba explains it later on. We're going to learn it towards the end of the fourth parak in about another month. We're going to learn a sugya over there about a case which we learned way back in Shkolin about people who are sending their mass, the shekel to Yerushalayim and they get lost or stolen on the way. So Rabba explains over there, Dama Rabba, when the Mishnah over there uses the word nignavu or ovdu, nignavu, usually you would think nignavu means it's stolen by ganavim, which is a shem asafar is chayav for, and ovdu usually means, like we said, it was lost. But he teaches it differently. Nignavu means ballistic mezuzah, means it was they were held up by armed bandits, And again, as we've learned many times in Rav Kama, an on bandit is sort of a cross between a ganav and a gazlan. He's like a gazlan in that he's like a gazlan in that he takes it from you openly, but he's like a ganav in that he kind of hides out in the bushes and then jumps out at you, as opposed to a gazlan who stands there on the highway and robs everybody else. And Ogu means Shatabas Finas of a Yam. And Ogu doesn't mean he lost it, for example, but if he fell and then it fell and he didn't notice it, it means, for example, that the ship sank. Both of those things are an oinus, which is Shem HaSachar, is Sotu. Therefore, by the same logic in our Mishnah, Ogu does not have to mean, for example, that he lost them. Ogu can mean that there was an oinus, which is Shem HaSachar, would be Sotu.
And Rava would exclude that.
No, well, Rava himself doesn't have to understand our Mishnah that way, but he understands the Mishnah in Shalom that way. We can use his explanation of the Mishnah and Shkolim to explain how the Yosef would understand our Mishnah, the Avdu of our Mishnah. Continues the Gemara. Amar Yehuda Amar Shmuel Halacha Kedav Tyfen. The Halacha is like the Tyfen. You are allowed to use that money. Therefore, you are considered to be. Therefore, you're considered to be. Well, according to Rava, you're a Shem Sachar, and according to Yosef, you're a Shoyl. Your shoyl. And again, we have the Machlokes Rishonim, who the halacha is like. Most Rishonim pass in like Rav Yosef, that you are in fact a Shem HaSachar normally, and therefore in this case you'd be upgraded to a shoyl.
In this case, meaning what?
In this case, where you have money, that was gotten from selling a lost object, from selling a lost animal.
What would be the difference? I mean, those seem.
That's the difference. Money. Exactly, the difference would be as far as I know.
But you cannot return the money. The exact.
No, you're not returning the exact money regardless. That's why Joseph said the Gemara could have just as well instead of Shoyle could have used the word loyal. The point is, if you're showing a soccer and there was an onus, you're going to be Potter. You'll swear in based in that that's what happened, you'll be Potter.
And
if you're Shoyle, you're going to be hired to repay the owner when he shows up. Okay. The Gemara tells the case. B'yad Rachva had Havalei Hanu Zuzidi Yasmi. Rachva, the name of one of Amidoyim, had in his possession money that belonged to Yisoyim, that belonged to orphans. Also, a commander of Yosef, so he came to ask of Yosef a shayla, like, am I allowed to use that money? Am I allowed to invest it, to spend it, whatever? And again, you know, I'll owe the assignment for later. So he says, yes, Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel says, Allah has like a tachman. Therefore, yeah, you're allowed to use it. Abaya says, but there's a difference. The law of Itman Allah, don't you know that it was said about that by the Amaroyim? Omer of Chelvoy, Omer of Muna, Loishonu Elevid Mea Veda, Hoyo Tarafa. This din only applies to money of a lost object, because to begin with, you went to a tircha there. You had to feed the animal for 3 or 30 years, whatever it is, however long, before you sold it. Exactly. But if you just, for example, found money to begin with, you just, let's say, found money in a case, like we learned earlier with Peretz, actually says, let's say, where there is a simon on it, so you can't just keep it for yourself, you have to set it aside, for example, with the towers or whatever, you didn't have any tircha because you just took it home. Then the din does not. Then we don't apply the din. Then we don't apply the tax and din over there. Bahani kamaros aveda gamul. This money of yisayim is like money of an aveda. You didn't go to any tircha with it. You just the yisayim. It's the money. It's the yisayim's money that you're taking care of or whatever, that you're watching for them or whatever. On the lay, Sir of Yosef says to Rachva, zil. Go, that's it. They're not allowing me to be master to you, because Abaya has a valid point. There is a difference between Aveda, and there is a valid difference between Aveda and anything else.
And that's, he agreed?
Well, he said, I may not agree, but the fact is, Abaya has a valid argument, which I don't have a counter-argument to, and therefore, yes. And that is, in fact, the halacha. They say an interesting thing, by the way. The Gemara tells us in Sanhedrin, I think we had it one time before, that after a din Torah, a dayan is not allowed to go to. No, we didn't learn Sanhedrin yet, but I think we mentioned it one time in the Gemara before, I don't remember where. Mm-hmm. That after a din Torah, one of the dayanim is not allowed to go over to one of the baladinim and say, you should know something. I really was in favor of your opinion, of your side, but I was outvoted. You're not allowed to do that. A case, so why is Rav Yosef saying over here, is it like, they don't allow me? So the end, one interesting answer is, Rachba himself was one of the Amoraim. He was present in the Beis Medrash when this whole discussion was taking place. So he himself heard what's going on. He heard what Rav Yosef said. He heard Abaya's objection. So there's no telling him something that he doesn't otherwise know. When you have the Din Torah and the Dayanim are sitting in their chambers and discussing, and the Bali Dinim are outside, then you can't hear where you're.
In the Beis Medrash, you can.
Yeah. Mishnah says, Motta Sfarim, if you found Sfarim, now Sfarim, Sadashi explains all the Sfarim they had in those days were written like our Sefer Torah nowadays as rolled scrolls. It was only later on, it was only in the time, sometime in the time of the Goyim, I think, that they started using books like we're familiar with. The Rambam, for example, mentioned that we talked about this once before. The Rambam mentioned the manuscript of the Gemara that he once saw that was written like a Sefer Torah that was 500 years before his time. They found a fragment of an ancient Gemara from about that period. You're talking like about 600 CE that's written like a scroll. Yeah. So apparently, yeah.
The same layout.
It would be the same. No, it wouldn't be the same. No, they didn't have the same layout. No, the layouts of our printed Gemara, they were actually intensified. With manuscripts, they almost never did that. When they had manuscript Gemara, you'd have the manuscript of the Gemara, and then there'd be a separate manuscript that would have Rashi, and a separate one that would have Tosafot, you'd have to keep them all around. But the concept of putting them on the side of the page was only when they developed printing. But no, I'm talking about something else. That the earliest written Gemaras, apparently, were written like a Sefer Torah, a scroll, one column, another, and you have to roll from place to place. An interesting idea I once came across is the early Christians, when they started developing their so-called holy writings, they wrote them in the form of books. As opposed to our Sefer Torah, that's probably
they never wrote
them in scrolls. So therefore, for several hundred years, Jews didn't want to use books, codices like that. So it was a Goyish style thing. Eventually, it was forgotten that it was originally developed by the Goyim, and therefore Jews started using them. I guess something like that. I don't remember. Yeah. Cool. Okay. So what's the Sfarim? So if you found Sfarim that are scrolls, Kodah ben Echad l'Shloshim Yom, you read them once every 30 days, because otherwise you keep them closed for too long, they'll get moldy. So you have to unroll it every so often, and you have to unroll it every so often to air it out and read. And then you can read.
What reading, but then it's going to change.
We'll see in the Gemara. The primary thing is you have to roll them in order to air them out. While you're rolling them, you're allowed to read them. The Emania Daily, great. If you don't know how to read, go to the one, then you roll them from one end to the other to air them out. But you're not allowed to learn a new topic in one of them, because then you're going to have to keep it open for too long and it'll wear out. And another person is not allowed to read together with you from the Sefer, because each one is going to pull it in their direction and you may read it. Incidentally, actually, one of the Rishonim, I think it's the Ramban, but I don't remember, says that maybe this only applies, he says, to things like Sefer Torah and whatever, where you read from them relatively quickly. He says that maybe if you're talking about, for example, Gemara, maybe you would be allowed to read from them, you would be allowed to learn from them for a considerable amount of time, because then there's less chance with a Sefer Torah, for example, you read a pasuk quickly, then you read another, and you're going to be rolling it a lot from one place to another, it may wear out. With a Gemara, you're going to stay open on the same page for a long time, therefore it may not be an issue. Yeah. Anyway. Continue the Mishnah. Motzek Ksus, if you find clothing, Minara Echad L'Shloshim Yom. You have to shake it out again to air it out once every 30 days.
Minara,
you shake it out again, so it doesn't get moldy, so it doesn't get eaten by moths, etc. V'shotcha L'tzorka, and you should spread it out again to air it out every so often. L'tzorka, when it needs it, Avoloi L'chvoide, but not for his own cover, like not to decorate his house.
Mm-hmm.
We'll deal with the details of that tomorrow. And on. What if you find silver or gold, silver or copper utensils? Mishtavish behem l'tzarka, and you're allowed to use them as much as is needed for their purposes, because Rashi says those kinds of things, again, like money, the proper way to watch them is to bury them in the ground. But you leave them buried in the ground too long, they'll rust.
They'll rust away.
Therefore, every so often you have to take them out and use them. So if they don't, so you know, yeah, and clean them and use them. Yeah. So therefore, you can use them occasionally. Have a load of shotgun, but not in a way that's going to wear them out. That's going to dull them. Like, but Rashi says it means don't use them for a very long time. The Gemara is also going to tell us, for example, that it means you can't use them, let's say, with hot things, because that'll wear them out faster.
Yeah.
Yeah, not melt necessarily.
But
yeah. Like hot water or whatever, it would wear them out faster. Yeah. Clay zahav or clay chokis. What if you find gold or glass utensils? Lo yuga behen actually yavel yo. You bring them home. You wait till somebody shows up. Otherwise, you don't touch them until Eliyahu comes. Because Rashi says you bury them in the ground. Fine. Gold doesn't oxidize. Right. So therefore, you can keep it in the ground as long as necessary. Glass. Rashi says you shouldn't because it might break. The Rambam says another reason is also glass doesn't deteriorate in the ground either. Therefore, you have no reason to take it out and use it. Right. Therefore, you should just keep it buried. Exactly. So therefore, both those kinds of things, you should keep, just keep them buried indefinitely until the guy shows up.
Colored blood counts. Colored blood deteriorates.
Does it? Okay.
The colors go away.
Kind of dying. I don't know.
They're transparent.
Okay. We are going to talk later on tomorrow. We are going to talk about transparent versus colored blocks, but not in connection with our Mishnah. So, could be. Mata sack oikupa. What if a person finds a sack or a large basket, or anything else which usually he himself, it would be beneath his dignity to take. Let's say Rashi says he's an important person. He himself wouldn't, if he himself had a big basket someplace outside, he wouldn't bother carrying it inside. He'd have somebody else do it for him. Or anything else which is not usual for him to take, if it was his own thing, he himself wouldn't take it either. How do you know he's not obligated to take it? He's not obligated to set aside his own dignity for the sake of that. We'll learn on Lamed Amud Beis. We'll talk tomorrow about the details of that. If somebody finds tefillin in the market, in the street, he should evaluate how much they should evaluate how much they're worth, and then and manichan right away. So the two explanations in Rishonim what manichan means.
Tefillin
are worth a certain amount. Tefillin are worth a certain. In other words, you take them to an expert to get an evaluation of the money. Manichan la'alter. There's two explanations what it means. One is that it means the Ritva gives both these explanations, and a number of other Rishonim do too. One is manichan is malashan hanachas tefillin. You can wear them yourself. So, for example, in other words, what you do is you take them to an expert, you find out they're worth $1,000. Fine. You take $1,000, set it aside, so that if the guy comes to claim it, then you can give him $1,000, and you can start using those tefillin right away for yourself. The other explanation is that manichan means the same as manichan as we had in the case of the animal. It just means you set the money aside.
Seems
the tefillin themselves, you sell to somebody else, and then you set the money aside.
He's more likely to send them to the shabbat, which is every shabbat time.
Maybe, maybe not.
But manichan means set them aside.
Yeah, but manichan could also mean washing them up with tefillin. So actually, I mean, the Rambam has a line on it. The Rambam says that tefillin are different than the other things that we're talking about in the Mishnah because basically they only have one purpose. They're only for the mitzvah, right? Which actually leads the snare and the shock on Shulchan Aruch to discuss what about, for example, does this mean, let's say, for example, would you be allowed to, let's say, buy the tefillin for yourself to set aside in case, let's say, you need a spare pair, or in case, you know, your son is going to be by mitzvah in a year or two and you want them for him or whatever. That's the thing. Because ultimately we're saying you're not going to keep them forever. They're going to deteriorate eventually if they're not worn. Therefore, better you should set aside the money so the guy won't. So that's the thing. So do you look at it from the point of view that the owner is actually, the snare takes the view that the owner would be happy to have them used for a mitzvah rather than just sitting there doing nothing? Therefore, according to that logic, you could wear them yourself. But if you're just going to be setting them aside in case you need a spare pair, or because you want to set them aside for your son's bar mitzvah in a couple of years, according to the shmeh, maybe not, because you're not using it for a mitzvah right now anyway. Whereas according to the shach, it's more the fact that they're made for the mitzvah, and therefore the guy doesn't really care. He can always buy himself another pair of tefillin, which I was going to say in a second. Therefore, according to that, you could even do that, set the tefillin aside to use sometime later.
It's the tefillin of someone that you, like your grandfather or grandfather. I wouldn't like to give it away.
Okay, but under normal circumstances, fine. Most tefillin are not like that. In fact, the Gemara is going to point out, wait. Most of Ravina, so Ravina asks a contradiction. Our Mishnah said, most of Sparim, heard of Echam Shlajim. Anyway, fine. Sparim, you should read them once every 3 days. They may need to live because Gerulot. And if you don't know how to read from this, then you should just roll it to air them out, implying Gerulot in, you have to roll them. Shomman, and you're not allowed to sell them and set aside the money or use them. Why should it be any different? It's not Kabbalah necessarily, but why should it be any different? The truth. Amar Abaya, the difference is Tfilin Beba Chobu Mashkach Shiri. Tefillin can easily be gotten at the house of Bar Chovel. Bar Chovel was a famous sofer of those times. So therefore, and it was basically one pair of tefillin is much like another pair of tefillin. They're fairly interchangeable. Again, if they have sentimental value, okay, but most people don't. Most people just have regular tefillin that they bought from the local sofer.
I'm asking an asking question. You have a tefillin of your grandfather.
Uh-huh.
What do you do with them? They're still kosher. What do? You have to give them out?
You can use them yourself. You can give them to your bar mitzvah son or grandson or whatever. You can, whatever. It's not much of a halacha what you have.
You don't have to.
You don't have to. Yeah. So therefore, the tefillin are commonly found or easily found at the house of Bar Kokhba, who was a famous sofer of some kind. Svarim, logically, these svarim are not as easy to get. Therefore, you can't sell them and tell it, expect the guy to go buy other ones. By the way, interesting, a little tiny thing up in Kabbalah that's saying that tefillin are found at Bar Kokhba. Rav Levick brings in his writings from earlier from Kitzvah Arizal or something that Chavu is the initials of Chokhma Bina Vodah, which that's the tefillin represent the four motion, the four parishes of tefillin represent Chokhma Bina and the two aspects of Das. Very appropriately, therefore, the Das Elyon and Das Tachton and whatever. And there's a couple of Maimonides of the Siddur and about tefillin that talk about the details of it. So there's not Das Elyon and Das Tachton really, but there's a Das that's more closely associated with Chokhma and a Das that's more closely associated with Bina. That's what it is. So therefore you wind up with four parashiyos. So therefore, very appropriately, the sofer had the name Be'er Chavu, saying Chokhma Bina Vadas. Hashel Sefer Torah Machaber, if somebody borrows a Sefer Torah from somebody else, Hareza Lo Yashu Lenu Acher, he's not allowed to lend that Sefer Torah out to somebody else. Post Chavu Torah, right? He is allowed to open up the Sefer Torah and read from it. As long as it doesn't lure a new topic from it, and as long as somebody else doesn't read with him. Similar to our Mishnah, except our Mishnah wasn't talking about borrowing, our Mishnah was talking about an Abeda.
Why are you not allowed to learn something? It may be a mistake.
You're not allowed to learn something new. That's what we're going to talk about, right? We said in the Mishnah, because then it'll stay open too long and it'll wear out, it'll get rubbed out or whatever.
Isn't it more important to learn something?
It is, but it's also not. But also, you have to make sure that you're going to return the thing in its pristine condition. Obviously, if you made a deal differently with the owner, that's different. Yeah. There is, by the way, the Mordechai actually says, as far as this whole business of Sfarim, he makes the distinction that actually if the borrower is Talmud Chacham, then he has a little more latitude over here, because if you borrow it, you lend something like that to a Talmud Chacham, you expect he's going to make heavy use of it.
Right.
Actually, he says another interesting thing also. Remember, this is before printing was invented. So you're also allowed to, he says, if you're a Talmud Chacham, you're also allowed to copy out the sefer for yourself, even though you're diminishing the value of the original one, because now there's two copies of it where there was one. But nevertheless, it's what we call in later times a chassidish neighbor. You're in a way, you're stealing, but it's for a valid purpose in order to increase the knowledge of Torah in the world.
Okay.
Similarly, if somebody deposits a Sefer Torah for safekeeping with somebody else, Godel of Hashem as a Chodesh, he has to unroll it every 12 months. Post the Kodesh, but he can open it and read in it. In Mishvilei Pesachai also, but he can't, if he opens it only for his own purposes, in order to learn from it, that he's not allowed to do, because it's because he's not allowed to just use it.
And Megillah, same thing.
The Fashtas and Megillah is the same thing. Sumchot Zomer, V'chodesh Shloshim Yem B'yoshim Shnei Mas Chodesh. Sumchot says it depends. If new Sefer Torah, you have to roll it every 30 days. Because a new one, Rashi says, gets moldy faster than an old one. V'yoshim Shnei Mas Chodesh. And an old one, you only have to do every 12 months. Rebbe Elazar ben Yaakov, Rebbe Echad Zev Echad Zeh Shnei Mas Chodesh. Rebbe Elazar ben Yaakov says either way, 12 months. Okay. Well, we'll see soon. Okay. So now let's analyze the price. This is a brayta that we just quoted. Turn it up bottom. Yeah, so now we're going to analyze it. Amamar, Hashoyel Sefer Torah Machaber. If somebody borrowed a Sefer Torah from somebody else, Hareza Lo Yashu Lenu Lacha. We said he should not lend it out to somebody else. The question is, what's the chiddush? My idea Sefer Torah. What's the chiddush? Mentioning that's true of a Sefer Torah. I feel it called merely that. That's true of anything you borrow. The Amar of Shimon Lakish, because we find that Rav Shlakish said Kan Shana Rebbe in connection with a Mishnah in Gittin. We learned a Mishnah over there that said that if you were sending, if you're sending a get with somebody else, you're sending a get with shliach, and you're telling them while you're there, while you're delivering the get, pick up such and such a thing and bring it back to me, then you're not allowed to delegate it to somebody else, to give somebody else the get, to bring the get and bring back the other thing. Kan shonar Rebbe, if Reuben tells Shimon, bring this get to my wife, he also tells him, while you're going there, also I want you to pick up something from me from that area, something that belongs to me, something from my wife's house, whatever it is, and bring it back to you. If he hadn't said that last part, then Shimon would be allowed to delegate to Levi as another shliach. Because he said that, Shimon is not allowed to do that. And in that connection, Tan Shonu Rebbe, in this connection, Rebbe taught us, or Shlokesh says, Eina Shoyo Rashoy Lahashil, Eina Sefer Rashoy Lahashil. A person who borrowed something is not allowed to borrow, is not allowed to lend it to somebody else. A person who rented something is not allowed to rent it out to somebody else. Because that's the point of a hero. We say, when you said, I want you to bring this thing back with you, I don't want that my object to be in somebody else's hands who I don't know and I don't necessarily trust.
Yes and no. I mean, you could.
That's the point.
It comes back.
No, but the person has a valid reason to say that. Same thing over here. He has a valid reason. Yeah. So what's the chiddush about a Sefer Torah? The answer is exactly that. Sefer Torah, it's Rikhale. We do need a chiddush that the same thing applies to the Sefer Torah. Mao de Tema, because otherwise you might have thought, Nichale the initiative of a mitzvah of mine. Fine, a person would be happy to have a mitzvah done with his mind. Kamash Kalam, therefore the chiddush is that even by a Sefer Torah, that does not apply. Now, we do actually apply that concept of Nichale the
Inish.
So you can't remember that. We do actually apply this concept of Nichale the Inish to a certain extent. Halach. For example, it's based on that. There's a halacha, for example, that you're allowed to borrow somebody else's palace in shul.
Or lula, not on the first day, or whatever.
That you're allowed to borrow it even without the knowledge. Not on the first day, because it has to be lachet. It has to be yours. But if you borrow but that doesn't necessarily involve the other person. No. I'm saying, for example, the halacha is you're allowed to, let's say, borrow somebody's palace even without their knowledge. As long as you fold it afterwards, and as long as you don't ruin it. Because we say, Nichol Elish, tell the bits of my mind. The difference is, if you hear with the Sefer Torah, there's more of a chance that it'll get ruined by the other person. And, so the Rashba, I think, or the Ritva, points out, the vote is, therefore, Mela, let's say, for example, in a talus, you using it one time for davening is probably not going to ruin it. The guy will have it afterwards for davening. A Sefer Torah, a Sefer, it may get ruined. Then he's not going to have a Sefer to learn from. Therefore, you're actually causing him a loss, and therefore you can't do that. He is willing to have a mitzvah done with his mind, but not if it's going to cause that he himself is not going to
do it.
Well, we don't mean to say for Torah, per se. Again, we mean any scorim that were written in scroll form in those days. The point is still the same thing. If his sefer gets damaged, he's not going to have a sefer to learn from anymore. And therefore, you can't do that. Okay. The Braitha opinion points to the Korea, that if you borrow the sefer Torah, you can open it and read it. The question is, Pshita, well, obviously, Bela Lai Shailah. What else did you borrow the sefer Torah from? The answer is safer if Tuchala. You're right. That was post of the Korea is not really necessary. It was only meant as an introduction to the next part, where the Bryce is continued to Ravachala Yumabagula, as long as you don't learn a new topic from there. So post of the Korea, in other words, you're allowed to learn from something that you've already learned before. But then you're not going to keep it open for very long. But to keep it open, to learn a whole new thing, which will keep it open for a while, it's going to damage it, that you're not allowed to do. Again, unless you arrange ahead of time with the guy you borrowed it from. Okay. Then the Bnei said to you, we said that if you deposit a Sefer Torah for safekeeping by somebody else, go to local Shnei Chodesh, you have to roll it every 12 months, post the Korea vote, and the Bnei said continued, you can open it and read from it. The question is, Maya Vitekabe, what are you doing with it? What are you doing opening and reading it? It's a Tekon, you have no business using it.
So it's going to
be destroyed. No, you have to roll it. Who said you can read from it? The two, and furthermore, what does the Braitha mean? You must really talk also that if you open it for your own purposes in order to learn from it, they now have to. Harvard Post Chavik Kodama, you just said you can open it and read from it. The answer is Hachakama. What it means is like this. Imkshu Godalik Post Chavik Kodama in Mutter. If while you're rolling it, you have to have it open anyway, because during that time, while it's open, you're reading from it in Mutter. But it's not clear, you're only taking it out and opening it for you yourself to read from it. Also, then it's also because of the cotton, and you have no business doing that. Then the Braita had said, that it's a new Sefer Torah, a new Sefer, then you have to roll every 30 days, and it's an old one every 12 months. Rabbi Lezman Yaakov, and the Echad Zedah, the question is, Rabbi Lezman Yaakov, and the Tanakama, isn't he saying the Tanakama also say every 12 months? What's Rabbi Lezman Yaakov adding? Ella Eimer, Rabbi Lezman Yaakov, and the Echad Zedah, and the Shloshim Yen. No, you have to correct it and say that Rabbi Lezman Yaakov says in both cases 30 days
instead of
12 months. And he meant to say that in both cases, whether it's new or old, once every 30 days. So, who the halacha is like? If I remember correctly, the Rambam, the Shulchan Aruch, paskin that there was a difference between Aveda and a Pekodin. Aveda, our Mishnah said 3 days. Pekodin, the Tanakhama, the Braisa said 12 months. The Shach argues, though, that maybe it would be more right to say that the halacha should be 30 days in both cases, because then the halacha can be like the Stam Mishnah, the halacha can also be like the Rabbi Lezman Yaakov, the halacha is usually like it.
And what's the difference?
So, according to the Shach, that's how it should be. I don't know. I mean, if you ever have a Pekodin, if it's a Torah, then you can ask the Rabbi what you should do.
Okay.
Yeah. Then the Mishnah said, the Mishnah had said, also the Braisa had said, that you're not allowed to read some new topic from it, and somebody else is not allowed to read with you out of it. I have a contradiction. Braisa says, you're not allowed to read a parasha and repeat it, implying that you can read it one time, even if it's new to you. You're not allowed to read a parasha from it and translate it with Targum Unkulut, because again, you'll keep it open for too long. You're not allowed to open more than three columns in it. And three people are not allowed to read from it from one volume. Hoshnayim Kurd, find that two people can read from it. So, okay, all the other things you could transfer. You could say, for example, that if it's something, even if it's something that you already learned before, you're still not allowed to translate it because that'll take too long or to review it or whatever. But the Braisa says that three people can't read together. The Mishnah and the first Braisa said that two people can't. So, what is it? Amar Abaye, like Kasha, can be any nechat, can be shnei yonim. So Abaye says it's not a contradiction. One is talking about which is in one topic.
So
the other is talking
about one topic.
Wait, the other is where it's talking about two topics. So Rashi learns like this: two people are not allowed to learn from the same topic because then each of them is going to try to pull it to themselves to see if it's true. Two people are allowed to learn together from two different topics because this one will be reading this part, that one will be reading that part, and therefore there's no pulling.
If it's on the part of the scroll that they can.
That's what we're talking about. Is that right? So the Rambam learns the other way around. Two people are allowed to learn together from one part because they're both looking at the same thing.
Right.
Two people are not allowed to learn from two different parts because then each one is going to try to pull it together. Okay.
Yeah.
Two different ways that are showing half of understanding it. Then the Mishnah said, "Motzach sus menara echad b'shloshim yom." That the Mishnah said, if you found clothing, you have to shake it out every 30 days. Question is, isn't just shaking it out the memory to Niyur Ma'alila? You're telling me that shaking out is different clothing? But we find Rabbi Yechanan said, Mishi yesh le gardi the safe base, only if a person has an expert weaver in his house, you're now exclusive of Cholyon, should you shake out his clothes every day? And it's shaking him out, wears him out. So therefore, if you have an expert weaver by you who can always be sewing your new clothes, then go ahead and shake out your clothes. But otherwise, don't, because it'll wear him out. So why are we saying in our mission to shake it out? The answer is Amri's an answer. Shake it every day is bad for it. Shake it out once a month is good for it, and that's what the mission is saying you should do.
Why is it good?
Because every so often you have to shake it out to get off the limbs, to get any flies, insects, moths, whatever. Yeah. Ibaisema, or another possibility, like Kasha, it's not a contradiction. One is talking about if one person's shaking it. That's not so bad. It won't rip it. The other is talking about the bride, not the bride, it's talking about two people shaking it. Each one is pulling from their end. They may rip it. Either the same, like Kasha, or another possibility is there's still no contradiction. The Mishnah is talking about shaking it out by hand. The Rabbi Yechon is talking about beating it with a stick. Chutra is a stick.
Right.
You're much more likely to break it. It's a rip. Or yet another possibility, like Kasha, Habda Amra, Habda Kikna. There could be another possibility. One is talking about wool, the other is talking about linen. So Rashi, again, we have a difference between Rashi and the Rambam about what it is. Rashi learns that it means the wool one is more likely to get stretched out by the shaking, therefore you shouldn't do it. Therefore the Gershon is talking about wool, and the Mishnah would be talking about linen, which is much less likely to get stretched out. Yeah, again, the Rambam learns the other way around, that wool is, guys, we're trying to learn over here. You want to get whatever it is, get it, but then let us learn in peace, please, instead of crinkling the bag. Get up there. By the way, while we're talking about advice of Rabbi Yochanan, the Gemara brings a couple of other things of advice. You're better off drinking a cup that was prepared by riches than a cup of lukewarm water. Because lukewarm water is really bad for you. So as bad as it is with riches, where they may have cast a spell on it, you're even worse off with lukewarm water. However, the Gemara says, "V'lo yamor en elu b'klei matkes." That only applies if it's in a metal container. Obviously, chayes less one love, but if it's in an earthenware container, it's not a problem. Then warm water is not a problem. Then you're allowed to drink it. It's safe for you. Furthermore, even if it's in a metal container, we're only talking about elu like tzvit, only if it's not boiling. But if it's boiling, less one, brother. And again, there's no problem with it. Some of Farshim learned that means if it was at one time boiling and now it's cooled off, it's okay. Now, the Alta Rebbe and Shulchan Aruch says that it means it's actually boiling right now. Then it's fine. The Layamar and Elad Lashadabet Sivya. Furthermore, also, it's only a problem, even if it's in a metal container, even if it's lukewarm and then not boiling, it's only a problem if you don't put in it Sivya. Sivya, Rashi says, basically means it can be herbs, it can be spices, anything that you would normally put in hot water, tea leaves, whatever.
Then it's okay.
I will shot a bit Sivya, but if you put Sivya in it, less one bottom, there's no problem with it. V'amar Rav Yechanan. Also, Rav Yechanan said another thing of good advice. Again, he says it in sort of like a little bit of a sarcastic way, like you could lose a lot of money this way. If somebody's father left him a lot of money, and he wants to lose it, in other words, what he's going to say over here is a good way of losing a lot of money in a short amount of time. Before we continue, actually, I will mention a couple of other things. A number of the Rishonim, the Ritva, and a number of other Rishonim have a girsa, not Mois Harbe, but Mois Ribis. So his father left him money of Ribis. He doesn't know who to return it to, let's say, but he doesn't want to use it himself. So therefore, he figures it's still going to get lost anyway. So therefore, like a person in that case would feel the need to like spend it on things. Okay, he'll at least get some enjoyment out of it, but it'll be very short-lived, as we're going to go on to say. And then there's yet another after the Ben Yoyada says an explanation. We could be talking about a person who, for whatever he realizes about certain money, however it was earned, that there's bad mazel in it. And if it gets mixed up with the rest of his money, then everything. Not necessarily. According to Ben Yoyada, we're not necessarily talking about ribbons. We're talking about whatever. He has money that somehow he knows that there's bad mazel in it. It came from a questionable deal or whatever, again. So therefore, he wants to get some use out of it, but in a way that it'll get used up as quickly as possible. Anyway. So, Rabbi Yochanan said, Yubash Bigde Pishtan, let him wear linen clothing, the Ishtamish Paklay Tzchukis, and let him use glassware, the Yiska Poylin Val Yeshivim Marin, and let him hire workers and not sit together with them to supervise them. So each of these has a specific meaning. Yubash Paklay Pishtan, when he says wear linen clothing, doesn't just mean any linen clothing, it means the Kitna Rumaisa. It means Roman linen. Roman linen was very expensive, but it wore out very quickly. So therefore, that's an example of you use it.
And it was very thin.
It was very thin. I don't know what it was exactly. Whatever. It was very expensive stuff, but it wore out very quickly. The shavish b'kleis chokis, when he say he should use glass here, means that the disachibarta is specifically talking about white, meaning clear glass, which was very, in those times, it was very expensive. In fact, Tosfos points out, so expensive that we learned at the end of Sota that actually after the dismissal, Chokas Levana was gone. So what is Rav Yechanan telling you over here about using it? So Tosfos explains, doesn't mean it was completely gone, it just means it became very rare. And yes, different Mephoshim talk about different possibilities. It may mean that they stopped making it, still older pieces that are less
open. So it means white or it means transparent?
It means transparent. Transparent, yeah. So it was very difficult to make in those days, yeah. There is actually an interesting thing that they bring from Yerushalmi, that Schokas Levana had a special property that was flexible, in which case it may not have been glass at all. It may have even been some kind of plastic. Who knows?
Glass
is
not flexible.
Right, exactly. Right. Yeah. And so therefore, so that's the kind of thing he's talking about. You use those. Again, they're very expensive and they break very easily. And the Yisga Perlam, Yeshivimon, when he says you should hire workers and not sit together with them, Taguma, we explain that it means a specific kind of workers. The Todi, with workers who work with oxen, the Nafish Psidai, where it can make a tremendous amount of damage. Namely, Rashi says, usually in those days, when it came to when they do all their plowing with oxen, etc. Also, therefore, Rashi says, you know, look at the Rashi, not Shibsi Dai, or look, Rashi gives us a real wound picture over here. Most of the work they did on their land was with oxen. Also, when they plowed the vineyards and when they harvested the grapes, they would have the plow pulled by a wagon. Ventura Fakerem between the rows of the vineyard, Ima Boatstrim together with the pickers, the ones who are picking the grapes. And they put the grapes into that. In his times, they also grew grapes in his part. So then in the pastures, he assumed that they did it the same way in the time. Or maybe he had a couple of them as rabbits. I don't know. Whatever. It was an obvious common thing to do. And they put the grapes into that. So far, in the picture, there's these oxen walking through between the rows of the vineyard over there. They're pulling a wagon. In that wagon are the grapes that are being harvested, as well as the farm tools, as well as the plow and whatnot. Lepicha, therefore, so if the owner is not watching, yesh hepsed gadol, there can be great damage done. Because the workers don't really care about the vineyard and about the oxen. They'll just leave the oxen walking over or on the vines and the young plants. The hemiscalculin, so the plants get wounded by the oxen trampling on them and the wagon. And the oxen themselves get tangled up and then break legs and whatever. So therefore, the nafish today, you have tremendous damage.
The oxen walking between the rows.
Like this, when the owner is watching, then they'll be careful to take them between the rows where the plants aren't growing. But if the owner is not watching, they may feel, okay, we can take a shortcut. We'll take a shortcut across some of the roads, and therefore they'll end up rooting the vines and then damaging the oxen as well. So there's the nafish today, we have a tremendous damage. Rabbi Tosfos brings from the Rechananel a different explanation that not quite so drastic. But we're talking about when it comes time to plant. Again, they would plant, they'd use oxen to plow the fields, and then they'd plant. The problem is, when you have an ox pulling a plow, you need to have somebody over there making sure that the plow is biting deeply into the ground. Later on in the Masechta, we'll learn about that they regularly had.
Their feet have to go...
No, not the feet. The blade of the plow has to bite several tefachim into the ground. It has to bite at least three tefachim into the ground. If it doesn't, then the seeds won't go deeply enough into the ground. They won't root well.
But the labor is behind that, and he's putting the plow...
That's the point, in other words. So therefore, Sefer Ben Hanano explained that the kind of workers we're talking about over here is you hire workers to plow your field, but because you're not watching, as Rabbi Yochanan said, they get careless, they get lazy. They don't bother making sure that the plow goes deeply into the ground.
Right.
Later on, when you go plant, the plants don't get rooted well because they're not deep enough into the soil.